two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
Utah's abortion trigger law, which is now on hold. We just had that discussion for at least the next week and a half or so. They wait another hearing on it. A judge just put it on hold temporarily. But I want to talk about, there's a part of this law that, you know, you can obtain an abortion under some very narrow circumstances. One of those circumstances would be rape. But according to the law, it must be reported to law enforcement or to proper authorities. Well, now there's a representative, Jen Daly Provost, Democrat in Salt Lake City. She has plans to introduce a bill in the legislative session to expand like what agencies or who rape victims can report to beyond law enforcement. I want to talk about that.
It's an important discussion because there are rape victims that are not comfortable reporting to law enforcement for whatever reason it might be. And we've got to figure out a way where victims of abuse feel comfortable, feel like they have a landing place. We want to make it an option, you know, so that there can be resources as well.
There's a lot of reasons why victims of sex assault and rape don't want to report. You can just kind of imagine many different reasons. I mean, maybe you're fearful you won't be believed, or maybe you're fearful of the long process of going through a trial potentially and facing the person that you're accusing. But we do know that the Department of Justice does an analysis on this, and for every 1,000 sexual assaults, approximately 310 are reported to police.
So a third.
Let's get with Liliana Olvera Arbon. She's the executive director of the Utah Coalition Against Sexual Violence. You are advocating for Representative Jen Daly Provost's proposal to expand who can take reports of rape. What does that legislation look like? Can you give us an idea of what's being talked about behind the scenes?
Yeah, thank you so much again for having me. We are very interested in talking to the representative about what options may be available. I think you all really identified our key concern, which is that most survivors, more victims of rape, are not reporting to law enforcement. So, you know, this idea of reporting to law enforcement in order to get an abortion would then impact how safe survivors feel, right? It would be in some way forcing them to come forward in order to get some type of medical care in these situations. And so we are talking to her about what this bill would potentially look like and who would be and what avenues of reporting may be available for survivors in our state.
To be clear, the vast amount of abortions that happen are not due to rape. It's a relatively extremely small percentage. But again, it's a very important percentage to acknowledge and to understand that that this is an incredibly difficult time. So can you walk us through what would be a reasonable pathway if there is a victim of rape and she's impregnated? What would that next step look like? Who could or who should she be able to report this to if it's not law enforcement?
Well, you know, we recently worked on other legislation that addressed the access to additional resources, whether it was medical attention, therapeutic support for survivors. And there were several that were listed in those who could they could report to and talk to and still be able to get some access to reparations. And that was victim advocates. That was maybe some other key folks in the, that are in the victim advocacy work, right? But that would be something that we would have to navigate and talk about. I don't know if we have the answer yet. I know, for example, we have rape crisis centers that have victim advocates, but there are privileged confidential communicators. So how would that impact that relationship or that role of the victim advocate if they became a reporting entity, right? And so I think these are conversations that need to happen. And think about what are some of those unintended consequences without fully having that discussion of who the best option would be. We definitely know that reporting or coming forward for survivors is really difficult, whether they're reporting to law enforcement, a family friend, a victim service agency. It is quite difficult for them to say, I've been raped, let alone now know that due to the rape, they're now carrying the rapist child, right? So it is extremely traumatic for them. And so we have to find a solution in a way where that person or whoever that entity is really understands the trauma and can assess and provide that support for that victim as they access and navigate this healthcare.
Liliana Olvera Arbon is the executive director of Utah's Coalition Against Sexual Violence. In about the 60 seconds that we have left for this discussion, Liliana, give us an idea of somebody who is a victim of sexual assault. What are their fears? What are they most afraid of when it comes to the potential of facing a police officer to file a report?
Well, first, you know, one of the biggest fears is just if they're going to be believed, right? We know that there's still a lot of stigma around sexual assault. And when we're talking about incest, we're talking about sexual violence or child sexual abuse, right? The majority of the sexual assaults that are happening are from someone they know. Someone has access to them, right? And so coming forward to say this is happening may cause them to, again, believe they're not going to be believed. Fear of retaliation, fear of, you know, what the consequences will be if, you know, my father is the abuser, he's going to go to jail, he's the sole provider of the home. What are the consequences to me coming forward? There are a lot of barriers for the survivor to come forward, hence why we see low reporting rates when it comes to sexual violence. Again, I think it's our responsibility to look at, you know, policies that really work to consider survivors as traumatic as this event is being, that we really look at providing clear, confidential, supportive environments for survivors to seek this medical help.
Liliana Olvera Arbon, thank you for joining us, Executive Director of Utah Coalition Against Sexual Violence. Thank you for your time.
We appreciate being able to have that conversation. She paints a picture of why this is such an important conversation to have.
And we know that rape victims, victims of sexual assault, abuse, sometimes it takes months or years to come forward, sometimes decades.
Maria Chaleos, straight ahead, her top story, the Utah County Attorney's race, in which the current Utah County Attorney, David Levitt, lost handily in the primary.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.